The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much for listening. Once again this week, we are experiencing what I think is fantastic weather in the month of August. As Little League football season kicked off, we've been out at Bloomington South Freshman Field all week long trying to get the little kiddos ready to play. This is a year of transition for old Dave. I thought last year was sort of that. This year is definitely that. Thankfully, we have three other great coaches that will be helping our little Titan team along. So I'm looking forward to getting the guys ready to go and moving away from that for at least for a while. I was talking to Josh Norris at our office. He has two boys, both in the flag league right now, and one will move up to the big leagues, I guess, or little big leagues next year. And I said, well, if you coach, I'll help you coach. He's over at Ellettsville, so he'll take me back to my roots and heading back over to Ellettsville maybe next year to help out. So it's hard to get away from. I told my wife last night, she said, I told you not to. I told you. Here's what happens. Anyone can relate to this that has done anything related to youth, anything. You get attached to the kids quickly, right? They excited to see you. You're excited to see them. You see progress. You're encouraged by that. And that's fun. The issue is time, right? So my wife always said, you make time for the things you really want to do, and that is correct. But some of the things I want to do, I don't have to do, but I do want to do, I have conferences to attend, all right? I have a conference in California. I have one in Austin this year. I'm going to take a trip, this is my choice, to Tanzania in September. My brother and I are going to go meet up with some friends that are heading out from Jersey. Do some fishing, do some safari sighting. We're going to go through and see hopefully some pretty cool animals. I think that's the plan at least. And and then before you know it, we're hitting around November and you'll have Thanksgiving and Christmas and then New Year's. And here we are turning the calendar once again. Boy, time flies when you're having fun. That's what they say at least. We have Rock the Dock out at Lake Lemon on Saturday night. My wife and I will be out there with probably some friends or family enjoying that as well. So yeah, life goes on. So anyway, let's talk about what you guys wanted to listen about, which is money, right? Well, a lot of things are going on. We're going to have Hot Rod on in just a few minutes to talk about the markets, the Fed, all that. But Jimmy Inman gave me a couple of quick things for news of the week, but of course brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Give my buddy Lance a call at 812-323-8300. I was looking at an article that Jimmy gave me about hackers may have stolen the Social Security numbers of every American, right? How to protect yourself. I got a LifeLock alert this week that my wife's email password needed to be changed. And I got one of mine needing to be changed. I use a very simple one. I use it for about everything, like every stupid person out there. And I can remember that, right? It's always your dog's name, your kid's name, right? Whatever. You've always got a phone number that you use the last four digits. Maybe it's your folks' phone number. I remember going to my brother Mark's house, and he had a keypad. And I looked at it. I thought, what number, what would he put in here as a four-digit key? I looked at it, and I thought, 1971, the year he was born. I went 1971, right in his house I went. So we're very predictable as people, and I think the key is to be unpredictable when it comes to protecting your data. But anyway, my wife, so we were fortunate enough to be able to snag some Taylor Swift tickets, and she had 12 of them in her Ticketmaster wallet, had not divvied them out for the November show coming up, which is by far globally, not just nationally, globally, like the most popular show on the face of the earth. And someone went in and stole her Ticketmaster account. Literally hacked in to her account, I guess. Changed her email, I guess. Took all the tickets, I suppose. And then shut her account down. So she wouldn't even have known this, but she had some Pink tickets. Pink is going to be up at Lucas Oil, I think, sometime in the next couple months. And I had sent them to her. She went to get them in her account, and there was no account. So she called Ticketmaster's fraud department, left a message because no one would answer the phone. They said they'd call back within 24 hours, no phone call. 2 days later, she calls again leaves a message. 2 days later, no phone call. So we are still on the hunt to figure out how to get back these Taylor Swift tickets. Thankfully, I have a connection at Lucas Oil, and they are now working on it because it was purchased kind of through their network. We'll see. We'll see. But I'm telling you right now, I mean, how do you protect yourself? I don't really know. I think a lot of people think they know, but I got an email again from LifeLock, what, a month after? Well, it was in June when her tickets evidently escaped. 2 months before I had information from LifeLock that Misty's email had been basically hacked. So anyway, I don't know. Just be very, very careful. Be careful what you put online. Be careful about your everything. Be careful, because I don't know how to protect myself, let alone give you information on how to protect yourself. All right, let's talk about last week, and then we'll talk about this week and what we should expect going forward. But last Thursday, which was kind of nice, the average rate on the 30-year fixed mortgage dropped to 6.47%. Yeah, baby, 15-month low. A lot of home buyers welcomed that news. It appeared to help support that Thursday rally, but then the announcement left some wondering whether rates would continue to trend lower. Mortgage rates are tied, of course, to interest rates, more like the 10-year Treasury than the Federal Reserve. But some speculated the drop was due to market participants anticipating the Fed would adjust rates soon. That has nothing to do with it. The 10-year Treasury is what you have to focus on. And I think it got down to 3.94 last week. So that makes sense. I've been telling you this all along. You just add 2.25 to that typically. That'd be 5. Yeah, 6. There you go. You're right there. About 2.25 to the 10-year. That's traditionally 2 to 2.25% above. That's about where rates typically go. There's a risk a risk premium involved too, but I'm not going to get into all that. So, by the by, stocks ended last week with modest gains. We had a 5-day trading period that saw everyone embrace recession concerns and then dismiss slow down talk as speculation weakened as it progressed throughout the week. The Dow slipped, S&P slipped a little bit. Actually, overseas fell 1.21, but stocks did stage that comeback. Monday was the worst day last week for the S&P and the Dow in nearly 2 years as recession talk grew louder and everyone took this risk-off position. And I say everybody, I'm talking about institutional traders. You're not doing that. I mean, the money managers, people that are managing your mutual funds and the pension funds, insurance companies, the big money, those are the ones that kind of move it around a little bit quicker than anybody else. Most people just kind of stay the course, which you should. But on Monday, the Japanese market had its worst drop since 87. Remember, the Nikkei went from 40,000 down to hardly anything, and it finally climbed back up, and it's been a little toppy lately. So on Thursday, initial jobless claims fell less than expected, and that was a positive sign for the labor markets, which quieted some of the recession talk. Also, as the week progressed, there was growing speculation that the July jobs report was more of an outlier than a lead indicator of a pending recession. By Friday's close, all three major indices had regained most of the week's losses and finished pretty much flat. And then this week, right, we've had a lot of news coming out this week. We had producer price index on Tuesday. Wednesday, the CPI came out. Thursday, today, jobless claims, retail sales, industrial production, all kinds of stuff. Next Friday, tomorrow, whenever you maybe listen to this on Saturday, it already happened. Housing starts and permits, consumer sentiment, right? A lot of stuff going on. When we come back, we'll get Hot Rod's view of that. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Well, Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Got Rod Holloway now on the phone. Rod, of course, a contributor to Glass in the Afternoon on Mondays and Big Show Fridays, which will be tomorrow. Always entertaining, Rod, on Fridays when you and Glass talk more about Reds baseball, the Miami Dolphins, and whatever else you have on your mind before you talk about the week that was behind you at that point. So we're not going to do that. We'll let you say that for Glass in the Afternoon. But last week we talked before you came on that stocks ended last week with just a little bit of loss, kind of a volatile week. Monday was wicked, came back in, I think, Thursday of last week, ended the week pretty flat. But then this week we had a lot of news come out. We had the producer price index on Tuesday, CPI on Wednesday, and today on Thursday, jobless claims, retail sales, and more. And the stores, they're suddenly surging in the U.S. economy. The latest show of strength that says sales, U.S. retailers unexpectedly surged in July, the Commerce Department said. It rose a solid 1% from the prior month, and retail sales, which are adjusted for seasonal swings like Christmas and other things. But yeah, sales jumped across most categories last month, rising most at car dealerships, which is likely a reflect of the rebound. They had a cyber attack on software systems, I think, that dealerships used this summer. But they spiked up, and I can see that even locally. My son, as you know, works at Royal on the East Side. Today's his day off on this Thursday, but he delivered two cars this morning, sold three yesterday. He told me and talked to the F&I guy there that things are definitely starting to pick up. They're just needing some more inventory at this point. So, Rod, give us your view of where we are in things right now and where do we see things going.
Well, we appear to be back into a place where good news is actually good news.
Which is good news.
Right. I mean, you and I have been talking about this for a long time, that we would really like to get back to where good news is good news, bad news is bad news, and that companies and the market are rewarded when things are going well and you got good earnings reports and you have good economic data. And you hit on that. PPI came in. I think the month over month was one BIP lower than the estimate. The annual year-over-year number was dead on the estimate. CPI, I think, was just the opposite, in which the month-over-month was dead on estimate. The annual was one BIP below what the estimate was. More importantly, it was flat to slightly down in all of the numbers as inflation goes, which is a good thing as far as the Fed watch goes. Jobless claims came in today. The expectation was 234,000. It came in at 227,000. So that's the second week of weekly jobless claims coming in lower than anticipated. Retail sales, you just hit on that. It jumped. And even the excluding automobiles, which had a nice uptick, as you talked about, even excluding automobile sales, you still had a 0.4% rise versus a 0.1% estimate on the month-over-month comparison in that, and the market is rewarding that. In the pre-market, the market was relatively flat to down. I think the Dow was up. I think the NASDAQ was down. The S&P was about flat. Those data points come out, and you see a rally in the pre-market that has carried over into the market itself, and we have a nice, solid rally going on right now, which is a good thing. We have been calling for the fact of getting back to fundamentals and right. A fundamental-driven market and fundamentals driving individual stocks, and that's what we're seeing. And along the lines of the consumer, because we've heard it through this earnings report, we've heard some talk about some softness in the consumer. We heard it out of Amazon. We heard it out of Expedia from a travel perspective. But today, Walmart painted a slightly different story. They didn't come out and say that, oh, my gosh, the consumer's the greatest thing ever. But they did have a very good earnings report, solid revenue beat, solid earnings beat, and they are seeing good traction. Now, the only initial fear for some is sometimes when Walmart is the retailer that seems to be doing the best,
yep,
the fear is it's because everybody's dialing down.
Target's doing the worst, right? Whenever Walmart's doing the best, Target's doing the worst.
But the areas that Walmart really did well in this quarter would actually tell you that it's probably not actually a dropping down in what you're buying from an expense perspective, that Walmart is just doing a really good job, like within the grocery side of things.
Yeah.
They're doing really good in comparison to, like, say, the Whole Foods and those types of companies that are selling the organic and more natural-based foods. They're doing really well in that. So I think Walmart is doing some very positive things, both on the side of grocery and also in their online thing. that says, hey, maybe this time around, it's not actually the consumer dialing down to the lower level of the low-cost Walmart experience, but actually that Walmart is bringing in more of those middle-class shoppers.
Yeah, you know, and we haven't even got the back-to-school stuff yet, right? That's this quarter.
Right.
So we're talking last quarter, so I would expect it to be even better next quarter. And, of course, the kids here in Bloomington are all back to school, but Indiana University students are just now arriving. And the fury has not yet started, but I can tell you right now, my wife was at Target yesterday, she told me, and she said she can't find anything that she wants because of all of the mini fridges and the little desk and things that kids buy and parents buy once they finally arrive to Bloomington. My buddy over at Furniture Exchange, Steve Birch, always ramps up big for his August push, and I was telling him the other day, I'm like, you know, I think you're going to do just fine, because he's always worried. Everybody's worried about the online buyer, right? You can go to Amazon and buy everything, but you got to put it together. And if you have a co-ed from Seymour in Bloomington, or maybe someone from, you know, even overseas from India or wherever, and they need something, wouldn't it be nice to go somewhere where you can buy something, they'll put it together for you and deliver it to your place? I'm like, Virchie, you're going to be just fine. But that's just his nature to worry. But I think things are fine. You and I have been saying this from the very beginning. Number one, we didn't think rates were going to be cut as soon as everyone thought they were going to be. We thought possibly they might not even be cut this year. Now we know they are. I mean, who is not 100% sure the Fed's going to cut at least a quarter point in September, right? I think everyone's pretty much on board with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. Now the market probability has dropped from the 80 or 90% down to only about a 50% likelihood, but I still think that it's highly probable, because the one thing that I hope that the Fed, and I spoke on Glasser's show on Monday about this, the one thing that I really hope the Fed takes into consideration is that there's a lag effect before these rate cuts take hold. So you do a rate cut in September, it doesn't automatically have a huge impact in October. So it's okay to start easing into it. Plus the fact that if you only do 25 basis points,
no big deal.
25 basis points is suddenly going to fan the flames of inflation immediately, and all of a sudden we're back to fighting inflation again. So I think it makes sense for them to begin the process, because I think they're telling you, we don't really feel the need that we need to be as restrictive any longer as we once were. And that's a little bit of what you and I've also talked about. When the Fed is cutting rates to get out of a restrictive territory, but not trying to prevent an economic recession, the market does well. It's when the Fed's cutting rates to avoid a recession that the market typically doesn't respond very well to that first rate cut. So hopefully that's what we're going to get, a rate cut of we need to move to a less restrictive territory with our interest rates, but not that we believe that a recession is imminent and we need to start fighting that today.
Yeah, mortgage rates down under 7.6, what I say at the beginning of the show, 6 something. I have it right here somewhere. 6.47.
We're like at 6.80 or so.
Yeah, 6.47 last week. And the thing that I talked about, because the Fed's lowering rates, I'm like, that has nothing to do with it. The Fed has nothing to do with mortgage rates for the most part. Mortgage rates are driven mainly by the 10-year Treasury, and Treasury rates longer term are driven by inflation predictability. Like, what is inflation? What's real growth going to be? That's what drives long bonds. It doesn't September. Trying to get my months right. Doesn't really matter. Now, it does matter to CD buyers. It does matter to money market holders. And you and I talked about this. Everyone's getting kind of sucked in and hooked on these money market rates. But remember, money market rates are literally set, every day or every month, and they're going to trend down quickly. So why would I buy a CD, David, paying 4.7% for 2 years when I can get a money market paying me 5.25%? Well, because you have 4.75 or 4.8 for 2 years, not for 1 month.
In a year, that money market is probably going to be below what that 2-year CD rate is. And yeah, I think it's very important for people to evaluate what's the need for the money and when do I need it? Because yes, it is very alluring to run to those very short term, those 1 year, those 6 month rates, which are very, very high, or the money market, which, as you said, it changes every single day, but they've been pretty steady above 5 for a while now. But if you know you don't need the money for a while, you just want the safety of fixed income, you probably ought to consider locking some of these rates in for a few years before they go away, and all of a sudden you're back to only being able to buy down in the threes to three and a half, versus now you're still able to buy north of four and get good credit quality with it.
Folks, we have not had an inverted curve this long ever that I know of without going into recession. So recession is still on the table, and recessions are fine. It's okay to recede occasionally. That's where the name comes from, recede, recession. And if we get there, great. But if somehow the Fed and the consumer and everybody else threads this needle just right, we should be fine. But even I think, Rod, if we go into a recession, we may be out of it before we even realize we were in it, which happens sometimes. And I know by definition is one thing. I hate when you pin yourself into a definition of two negative quarters and all that kind of stuff. I mean, a recession is a recession, right? When things start to recede and they start to pull back, do you have to have negative GDP to have a recession? I don't know if that's true or not. I would say no. What do you say about that before I let you go?
And that was a bit of the argument when we had those two negative quarters, is that they weren't labeling it a recession because the other components that you would expect to see in a recession, predominantly the job market and wages, weren't reflecting anything that looked like a recession. You still had a low unemployment rate. You still had lots of job openings. You still had wage increases going on. So those were the other components. And I talked to Matt Glass about this. The majority of the people outside of the political arena are still sticking with two negative quarters of GDP being a recession as to how they're going to label it. And I think that if we have one in the near term, I agree it'll be very mild. And I think, once again, that's what you always have to keep in mind when you talk about a recession. It's really time horizon, because we are going to have another recession.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is it going to be this year? Is it going to be next year? Is it going to be 3 years from now? That's the great unknown. Right now, I would say that probably not this year. And to your point, if someone labels that we started a recession this year near the end, and of course they're not going to tell us that until we're already there and past it, then I'd say it's probably going to be a very, very mild one, because right now the economic data, while we have seen some consistent slowing for the last 3 or 4 months, it's not economic data that's falling off a cliff. It's just consistently slowed for the last 3 or 4 months. But now we're starting to see a stabilization within a lot of those numbers. You know, the jobless claims is one that is showing that. We saw some weakness in the consumer, and then retail sales for July come out, and that looks good. Walmart comes out with their earnings and says, hey, the consumer's doing fairly well by our standards, or what we're seeing off of that. So, yeah, I don't think that there is any reason to assume a deep, negative, hard recession is just around the corner. But once again, just like transitory inflation, what's the exact time horizon?
Yeah, what
because
does that mean?
Everything can be considered transitory if you give it a long enough window to look at.
Well, heck yeah. If you look at the time that we've been on this, that people have been on this earth, right? And you look at your timeline, it looks very transitory, right? Whether it's 80 years or 85.
At some point,
That's exactly my point.
Right.
It's all in perspective, like how you look at things. Rod Holloway, everybody. He'll be with us again on Glass in the Afternoon on Friday afternoon on Big Show Friday. Hot Rod, I'll see you back at the ranch, buddy.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, why do your kids not want your HSA? We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Yo Mo with David Hayes. Hope you're doing good. I'm doing great, by the way. This is going to be a fun weekend. Every weekend's a fun weekend, right? Either a YMCA gala event last Friday night, I believe. It was Friday night. And a great weekend. And then we had Colts on Sunday. And this weekend, we're going to be at the lake on Saturday for Rock the Dock. Not sure what Friday night brings. I'm going to be working kind of late Friday night, preparation for some big things for next week. But that's okay. My son delivered a couple cars on his day off. I told him, buddy, that's the way it is, dude. Whenever you're working kind of for yourself, you've got to do what other people aren't willing to do, and that's going on your day off, right? So hopefully, you know, I try not to preach to him too much. I let him learn by observation, both the good and the bad. Remember, what you do in excess, your moderation, your kids may do in excess, and that's both on the good side and the bad side. So if you moderately do things that you shouldn't do, they might excessively do things they shouldn't do. If you moderately do things that you should do, maybe excessively they'll do things they should do. So anyway, let's talk about health savings accounts, which you definitely should be doing if you have access to one. First of all, for those of you not familiar with it, it is the triple threat of retirement savings. What do I mean by that? Contributions go in, man, you get a tax deduction. The growth, you can invest it in whatever you want. It can grow tax deferred. And when you retire, you can take it out tax free. That's why I encourage people, don't use your HSAs. Dump it in, pay out of pocket for stuff. Let that accumulate. Because when you get to retirement, yeah, you can pay for the current expenses out of your health savings account, which is what an HSA is, or you can repay yourself for things from the past. Now, should you keep track of things you paid from the past? Yes, you should. Should you keep receipts? You should. Do people check that? No. After almost 30 years, I've never seen one person get audited for an HSA. You literally go in and click, you know, qualified distribution or non-qualified. It's like your 529 plans. You're the one, it's like self-regulated. Like, I'm the one that said it was used for educational expenses, not my bass boat, right? I'm the one that says that, and then someone have to come back and say, wait a second, you didn't do that correctly. Well, here's the thing. I've got to tell you the rules, right? But I'm also obligated to tell you the practicality of things as well. I'd follow the rules the best you can, but sometimes, you know, it's just not easy to keep a receipt from 30 years ago, right? And who wants to keep a receipt for 30 years? But maybe a spreadsheet, maybe something where you enter your expenses in, whatever. But you may have to qualify it at some point. I'm just saying that. But here we go, folks. You can put a bunch of money into HSAs, you know, a bunch of money right now. Every year it kind of goes up. I mean, when you look at HSA contribution limits for a family in 2024, it's $9,300 if you're over 55. You get a little catch-up when you're over 55. Why not 50? I have no idea. Our rules are so goofy. Some things are 50, some things are 55, some things are 70 and a half, some things are 73, some things are, you know, $250,000 for the net investment income tax, and then you look at your Medicare and it's $253,000. So I wish there was more consistency across the board. Like, okay, at age 50, you can do more catch-up to HSA. Why not, right? But it is a triple threat. But why do you not want to leave your kids with your HSA, right? Everyone's like, what happens to my charitable trust when I die? Well, you can have a successor that will manage that charitable trust for you. But what about your HSA? So do you have one? You may have thought that, what's going to happen when I'm gone? Well, you might be a little bit surprised. At your death, any funds remaining in your HSA are payable to the beneficiary that you name on the account. If your spouse is your beneficiary, news is good. If your kids get your HSA, they may not fare so well. So naming your spouse is a great strategy. If you name a spouse, if you're not married and it's going to go to your kids, and we'll get to that in a minute. But if you name your spouse as your HSA beneficiary at your death, your HSA will become their own HSA. They can use it just as you could have used it. Your spouse can maintain the HSA in their own name and continue to contribute if they're of the age they can, under 65. They can access the funds. Distribution for qualified medical expenses will be income tax-free, just as they were for you. Your spouse does not have to have HSA-eligible insurance to have the HSA, which is kind of cool. Remember, it's a high-deductible plan. You put money into the HSA. That's cool. But let's say that your spouse was not yet 65, and you had an HSA, it goes to them, and they're not in a high deductible plan, it's okay. They get to keep it and keep doing it the way they, and they may be able to make some contributions to the HSA. But your kids do not fare so well. Things get a little more complicated. If your spouse is not your beneficiary, maybe your spouse is deceased, or maybe you're single, and now you want to name your kids as your HSA beneficiaries. But be warned, non-spouse HSA beneficiaries do not fare very well. The account value of your HSA account becomes taxable to your children in the year of your death. This means your children will need to include all the HSA funds in their income in 1 year. That may not be very fun. They may not use the funds for their own medical expenses. There are no inherited HSA accounts. This means there's no stretch available, no 10-year rule, no nothing for HSAs. So if your children are in a high tax bracket, which you hope they are, right? You hope they are. The requirement of a lump sum distribution means your HSA assets could be gobbled up by taxes. Uncle Sam may end up with more than your kids get. That's not a really good outcome. So how can you avoid this? To avoid losing your HSA to taxes, if your spouse is not your beneficiary, you may want to consider being more open to taking tax-free distributions from your HSA during your own lifetime. Whenever possible, to pay for medical expense and reimburse yourself for qualified expenses you paid out of pocket in previous years, as long as those expenses occurred after you established your HSA, right? You have to have had established an HSA before you start counting up those old expenses. This is the most inefficient way to distribute the remaining balance in your HSA, period. That's about it. So why do your kids not want your HSA? I guess they'll take it, right? It's better to have paid it and had it than never had it at all. I always say that about taxes. Like, it's better to have made it and paid it than never have made it at all. Where did I get that saying? It's about love, right? It's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. I'd say money's kind of the same way. But isn't it nice that you could have loved it yourself and never give any of it away to taxes? I think so. So just be aware of that. For those of you that brag about your big HSAs, do people do that? I've had a few people come through my door. They're pretty proud of their HSAs. But I'm like, use it, dude. Use it up. We don't want this to go to the kids. I'd rather you leave other assets that are more tax efficient to the Roth, the life insurance, the non-IRA stuff. Leave your IRAs to charity. Use the qualified charitable distribution rules to your advantage. All the things that, right, help you make life better. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, when do you pay debts off, or when do you consider not if you're retiring? We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I hear you now bragging about your HSA. How big is your HSA? Oh, geez. Look into that as far as you want. All right, here we go. When do you pay a debt off and when do you consider not? If you're retiring, right? Everyone's like wants to be debt-free, and I think you should be if you're heading into retirement the best you can. But it happens all the time, right? People come in and they're like, should I pay this off? Should I not pay this off? It kind of depends, right? Everyone's focused on interest rates. When you retire, I don't give a crap what your interest rate is. It could be zero. It's about cash flow. It's more about cash flow. How much cash flow do I need to cover the debt service? Let's say I owed 80 grand on something and my payment's 1500 bucks a month and it's on zero interest rate. Pay it off. Pay it off because I need to generate $1,500 more from somewhere to pay that debt service. Just pay it off. But what if you owe 350 grand on a house and you have that interest rate of 3%? And it's a 30-year amortization, and your payment's 1500 bucks a month, which I did the math, it's 1487. Probably not pay it off. Probably not. Why? Because why? But if you have a small balance with a large payment, pay it off. We were just working with someone recently who had a trailer and a truck. They owed $80,000 on it. And we looked at another debt they had, and they owed a lot more, but the payment was lower. And again, in retirement, it's all about cash flow. Now, you've entered a new phase, right? You have to get into this phase of creating cash flow, reliable cash flow in retirement. That's the key. You're in the distribution phase, and it can be nerve-wracking unless you've got a really good plan that's pretty foolproof or as close to foolproof as possible. I mean, it's hard when you've been squirreling away your food for 40 years to start eating what you've squirreled away. You know, what income do you have now? Let's look at the net, not the gross. I don't care about the gross. It's what you can spend. Like, what can I take to the grocery store and spend? What do you spend that income on now? What things are going to be gone or paid off when you retire? What things might be added? Maybe some health insurance costs. Maybe you're going to have more travel. You're going to buy a boat or an RV. Boil it down. Then take off what income sources you have or will have created. You could do it yourself, right? Social Security, maybe. Maybe you've created an annuity income, whatever. Maybe you have a pension. Do you plan to work part-time? Do you plan to buy some income, again, with some of your money, being buying some kind of an income stream? You can do that, exchange your money for an income stream. How much do I need my investments to produce? Am I good with a consumption plan, meaning I'm going to consume my assets over time, or do I want a preservation plan? Preservation means I'm going to preserve my purchasing power, right? So if I have $1 million now, in 20 years, I need $2 million to buy the same things I can buy today, or maybe 30 years. It's just a matter of inflation. Do I want that plan, or am I okay saying, okay, in 20 years, I'm okay still having the same $1 million, even though I know it doesn't buy what it did today? You now have this blueprint. Once you've created this plane, now you have a blueprint. And now it's time to construct it and maintain it, right? Construct and maintain. Maintaining your home is better than neglecting your home, right? Little adjustments here and there go a long way. Painting, staining, power washing, retirement planning and monitoring is really no different. You look at a plan and you say, this is the take-home income I have. I would like to replace all of it. That's the answer everyone gives me. They don't say it out loud. I have to actually bleed them to water. It's kind of a rhetorical question in a way. How much of your income do you want to replace? You sit there and you can stare at each other like in a staring contest for like hours. The answer is in their mind, all of it. I want all of my income replaced. That's fine. We can start there. So let's start with your net income. Remember, you don't have to gross as much as you gross now to net what you net now. All you're paying is federal and state tax. That's it. You don't pay FICA. You're not putting money into your retirement plans. You're not paying union dues. You're not putting money aside in your, you're not paying for your spouse's health care, all that. It's net income plus your federal and state tax. It's pretty simple. Then you say, okay, I have Social Security coming in, and then this is the amount I need from my pool of money. Do I have a pension? Take that off. Okay, this is what I need from my pool of money. And you just work backwards. And then you decide, okay, I'm going to have discretionary spending. It's going to be crazy for the first 10 years. I just had this discussion with someone this morning. They're newly retired. Grandkids are young. They're spending like wild man people. I would say like drunken sailors. My mom used to say that. And that will stop. The grandkids will get older. They won't care to spend as much time with grandma and grandpa. They're going to care less about traveling and cruises and whatever else they're doing. And they're going to slow down a little bit. So discretionary spending, I don't normally inflate that like I do necessity spending, you know, for electric, for gas, for cars, for stuff like that. Because your travel and discretionary kind of has a way it's working itself out over time. But your health care is going to go up crazy. Your basic living expenses are going to track normal inflation, but your discretionary spending will tail down. So that's why I think the financial planning systems out there are misleading, because they don't follow real life. They follow, I'm going to spend as much money at 90, inflation adjusted, as I did at 70. It's not true, folks. 30 years, you're talking to someone who's been at this thing 30 years. I did a 90-year-old luncheon this week at our office for women. It was fantastic. We had 36 women in our database over the age of 90 that are clients. We invited all of them to come. Obviously, some can't come because of medical or other reasons, but we had a dirty dozen come out, and it was great. And I was talking to people that I've had a relationship with for 25 years. And you think about someone who's 95 and you think 25 years ago, what age they were doing things they aren't doing today. And they even said, yep, this is like the highlight of their week. And we had a blast doing it. It was so much fun. I encourage any of you to spend time with people over 90. You won't regret it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, if I have time, when does a lump sum beat an IRA rollover? Well, sometimes it does. If we have time, I'll talk about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I could talk about why a lump sum beats an IRA rollover for some people, and I don't have time. So I'm going to save that for next week. I'm going to put it over here to the side. I'm going to talk more about our luncheon because it was so great. So this idea came about at Christmas time. We had our open house, and Jane Martin, I'll speak to her by name. She's in her 90s, very active, still travels a lot, she's traveled the world. She drives, all that kind of stuff. At Christmas time, I mentioned, hey, Jane, what do you think if we did a luncheon for women over 90? We just all got together, and we just talked about where you're from, where did you grow up, about your parents, your siblings, you know, your life, what you've seen change. And she said, that would be great. And I said, okay. This was Christmas time. I said, okay, well, when the weather gets better, we're going to do that. And she said, David, we're all over 90. We can't wait until the weather gets better. Well, we waited not only until the weather got better, but just we waited until this late summer, and we put it together. And thankfully, no one that we were going to invite had expired. So everyone that we invited that was able to come came, and it was great. And we did that. So I talked a little bit about my family heritage and history with the Hayes family. I talked about my mom's side of the family, the Atwoods and Headley families. Been in this area generationally. I mean, long time. Great granddad was a firefighter. My grandpa was a firefighter. Talked, of course, about the Hayes market and my great grandfather, my granddad, my dad, you know, and legacy, right? Creating a name that stands for something, creating a legacy of goodness, kindness, and generosity. It was great. And then we passed a microphone, right? And we passed around, and, you know, it was great. And we were in our legacy center at my office, and I would, you know, I knew them all very, very well. So I was able to talk about things that you used to do. What are you doing now? And it was great. And I asked them one question that I thought I'd get a different answer on. I said, what age do you feel like you were the happiest? And the person I asked said, you know, probably, why does 33 stick out? And I go, 33 years old? You were the happiest at 33? She said, yeah, I think so. And she gave me a few reasons why. Her husband was still alive. Her kids were in high school, or entering high school. She gave me some really good reasons. But then I pivoted to someone who I knew would answer the way that I thought they would answer. I said, Pat, at what age are you the happiest? And she said, you know, right now. I thought that's the answer I was looking for. Because I've talked to people, and people most of the time seem to be the happiest about where they are right now. Ages and stages of life don't necessarily matter. Obviously, being 94, looking back over your life, one thought 33. She thought 92 was her happiest time. Sitting with her daughter, it was great. And so I think having an attitude like that will probably promote your longevity. I mean, if you're always looking to the good side of things, looking to be happy, looking to help other people, being advocates for other people, just generally happy when other people are doing great, I think that bodes well for your longevity. And that was a good lesson for me. I left that luncheon after an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, feeling good. All right, I'm going to take a break. Come back. We'll wrap this thing up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right. Thanks so much for listening. If you missed any of the show, you can always hear it on WGSaleRadio.com and then wherever you pick up your favorite podcast right after the Thursday night airing. Of course, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. is most popular listening spot as well. And if you missed any of the shows previous, you can always go back into the archives and check those out as well. Both on the podcast, you can go back and get old shows, or on the radio station's website as well, WGCLRadio.com, Bloomington's Voice. I will tell you this, that the podcast 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win, is fired back up. It's going to start going live again soon. I have so much content, I can't hardly pin myself up with the excitement of doing that. So next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about elections, right? They've already opened early voting, I saw in Florida, right, for the November, which I hate early voting. I think national primary day would be great. That would be great. I think everyone should probably vote in a shorter amount of time, maybe a week. I understand absentee. I was talking to someone this morning. I think that in the world of the technology we live in, I mean, you go to ssa.gov and put in a five-step authentication thing to figure it out, right? And what street did you live on? What car did you have? Whatever. And you can vote like that. That'd be kind of cool. Do I think that's going to happen anytime soon? Probably not. But would be nice if we could figure that out, make it easier so that everyone would actually vote. We live in this easy world, easy button world. Amazon, bang, 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 bang. Who wants to go stand in line at 6 in the morning at the local church to vote? Nobody wants to do that anymore. That's why early voting's okay, maybe, but I want it to be shorter. So anyway, not going to talk about that next week, but we will talk about a lot of great stuff. Hopefully you have a great week. We'll talk to you next week, guys. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.